In our society, it's a common and pretty well accepted idea that those who speak the loudest on certain topics are doing it because they have a problem with that particular thing themselves. And I gotta tell you, in the recent future, and even further back than what you would call recent, there have been some examples of the loud ones going down for the very thing they were loud about, or at least being accused of those things. Some of them came out and, you know, said that they were guilty and asked for apologies and things like this. But you gotta wonder, is it human nature that we tend to try to cover up our faults by railing against those in whom our faults are obviously displayed? Is it the old playground thing? You pick on the weakest kid because you feel weak inside. That's not really the case anymore. Bullies have other motivations. So does the bad guy throw up a smoke screen by pointing the finger at everyone else? Does he out his neighbors to keep the attention from his own hidden life? We have a unique situation being those who believe in the Creator. If you believe in the Creator, then you must believe that an all-powerful Creator who brings things into existence has desires, has a plan, okay? If you look around and you believe that the things that you see were put into order by a Creator, then the order itself attests to the fact that this Creator is a reasonable, rational being who has ideas and things. So with an understanding that there is a God, requirements follow. It's just a function of reason, right? So how do we speak as Christians? Are we meant to stand around pointing the finger? And is there any really truth to the idea that one who points the finger actually has four other fingers? Well, three other fingers pointing back. If you point, you remember, if you point your index finger at somebody else, you have three other fingers pointing back at you. Well, I hate to tell you, but if you look in the book of Romans, Paul actually agrees with that old adage. You've got three fingers pointing back at you, my friend, when you begin to point your finger at other people. I mean, you know, it's not a hard thing to really digest, since if we're reading the book, we see that the tenor of the entire book is against the judgment of one human being against another human being. Actually, it tends to mercy, to fairness for everything that lives. Okay? Adam and Eve, I've said it before, you know, they were given a responsibility for tending the land. You know, they were put here on the earth, and in a perfect world, we're already given the responsibility to take care of what they were given. So there was already a responsibility there when things were perfect. But after things became imperfect and human beings had issues that they had to deal with all the time, you know, because the perfection of thought had been turned over into the hands of someone who only wanted to pervert the good things that God had done, the Lord in his kindness told us how to do things. He understood that boundaries are essential. He understood that before sin came to our planet. But afterwards, he understood that those boundaries were essential. And the boundaries that he laid out, such life, such pleasantness. I mean, if we keep with that, goodness, if we were to keep with that, you wouldn't have to really worry about anything. You would be able to live in perfection. Okay, if everyone kept the law without fail, It would be a perfect, perfect world. Again, even though the nature was no longer starting out at a point of perfection. If we all kept the law without dropping anything, You see, a lot of times people run away from the law because they think that the effort to keep the law was what caused the Pharisees, and I hate to add them in, but the Sadducees, because the Sadducees were not attempting to keep the law at all. They were interpreting everything as ethereal and avoiding even the proof in the Old Testament that there was a resurrection, that there was a life that would be judged. But anyway, people think that the attempt to keep the law was what caused the Pharisees to misunderstand the meaning of the law, but that's not actually what happened. The law, according to the words of Moses, would be for righteousness. In Isaiah also it says that the keeping of the law for the Israelites would be their righteousness following after that. And why? Because the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul, right? The law that was given to the people is the heart of Christ. He's the Word, right? The Word made flesh. And all of those things that he told them is the law of Christ. For instance, just a quick foray into Leviticus. If you look at Leviticus 19:14 through 18, it may shock you because some of you have this notion that the law that was given was, you know, don't pick up three sticks, you know, don't let this word slip out of your mouth, you know, or you're dead meat. But that's not it. That's not the whole of it. The whole of it was about love. The whole of it was about how to live every individual living a complete, beautiful, fulfilling, rich, happy, and unfettered life next to his neighbor. How can we all do this and live together in peace? People want to live together in peace, and the first thing they say is, imagine there's no heaven. How does that give you peace? Excuse me. You die, and what happens? Okay? You end your journey here, and what happens? Nothing. Really? That makes you peaceful? That it's all in vain? Since we all don't keep the law to perfection? But I digress. Anyway, Leviticus 19:14 through 18, the Lord talks about not hurting those who are at a disadvantage. If a person is deaf, you don't make fun of them. Now, see, you would wonder, why is this in the law? John can't hear me, so if I stand behind him and make fun of the sound of his voice and make gestures and stuff and cause, you know, Lucy, who's standing on the other side, to laugh, how is that a problem? That's a spiritual thing. That's a spiritual thing. That's about your motivations. That's about your heart. It's not just an issue of behavior, because John may never find out. You might feel it, but he may never find out that you're doing this thing. But God says, don't do it. It's against the law. It's against the law of God. Don't lay a stumbling block for your blind friend, your neighbor. I don't care if he's a mean guy. Don't put a stick in front of him and make him trip over it when he can't see it. That's the spirit of God's law. That's the thing about your behavior. That's the thing about your heart. In verse 15, it says, "Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord." Now, that's kind of a weird thing to put in there, you know, don't stand against the blood of your neighbor. What does that mean? The blood was about the sacrifice. It was about the sin. Okay, if somebody is laying out a sacrifice, asking for a forgiveness of sin, you don't stand in protest of that. When a person is going through something and there's a sin there, you don't make it worse. You don't make it worse. In verse 16 and verse 15 is huge. And that's really at the base of what we're talking about today. Be fair. God is a God of justice. In Isaiah, it says, "For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are those who wait on him." Why? We think about justice and people scream about justice now, and it always ends in, you know, some form of death. You know, justice doesn't come through in the English language as it once was intended to come through. The way that God talks about justice is replete with mercy. Come boldly to the throne of grace. The actual place that he sits on to do judgment is called the mercy seat. We used to sing songs about it. Because why? In Isaiah, it actually says he's going to be just, right? He's a God of justice. So he'll wait so that he can be gracious. Because he's just, he's not going to come and smash your head against a rock while you do that thing. While you're down in your seat. He knows you struggle to do right. Keep struggling to do right. Because the Lord is gracious. And he wants to give you that grace. He's merciful. You'll never find more mercy than you'll get with God. Don't run out to the world thinking that they're going to give you more mercy than you're going to get with God. You know, it is more merciful for you to be able to look into the face of who you actually are. Because sometimes it is another face. You're on the inside. You need to be able to see what you are. If you cannot see the floor, have you ever tried to mop in the dark? Have you ever tried to mop in the dark? If you've never tried to mop in the dark, I'm going to issue you a homework assignment. Invite tons of kids over your house and give them juicy drinks in open top cups, candy and sugar and pop, things that will spill, and have them run around the kitchen and let it get dirty. And then after nightfall, turn out all the lights. Make your mop bucket, pine saw, hot water, and mop that floor in the dark and see what you have. Turn the light on afterwards and see how much gets clean. There is a place for understanding who you are. So don't run away from God when being with him reveals how little we actually are, how small we actually are. You understand yourself better when you're close to God. It's a frightening thing to realize that you don't have any power. But when you're close to him, he'll take you and hold you. The only strength that you have right now, the thing that's making your heart beat, that little spark of electricity, where did it come from? It came from God. You don't have to be afraid of those who can take your life now. Be worried about the one who can take your life now and extinguish your soul. This is real. It's real. And running from it doesn't change a thing. We're going to have to finish this up in another part. We're talking about judgment, folks. Love God, love man. I redid the work, I turned it inside so I could be like you, but I can't be you. But now I see you. You are a rewarder of those who diligently seek you. I'll seek you. I'll seek you. I will find you. You are a rewarder of those who diligently seek you. And if I seek you, I'll seek you till I find you. You are a rewarder. I seek you till I find